And today we take up the last of this series, which I'm calling Pentecost and the special days of the Pentecost season. Not just Pentecost Day, but the Pentecost season, which we're in now, and the special days within that season, and also as a kind of a little teaser at the end of my time with you, celebrations that never should be celebrated. Okay, well, and interrupt me anywhere along the line and fight with me. I've got a strong enough ego for that anyhow. And then we'll have some discussion time at the end too, that is my hope. Again, I would want to take time seriously. I think that's what the calendar does. The church year calendar helps us to take time with some kind of seriousness. Time and history. You may have heard the distinction between the so-called nature religions of the Bible days, concurrent with Judaism, and the Judaic view of things. In the nature religions, it was a circular. They understood time as a kind of circular thing, one thing after another. Planting, harvesting, planting, harvesting, planting, harvesting, birth, death, rebirth sometimes. So it was a kind of a circular picture, in other words, that the nature religions provided. But Israel always had a notion of linear. There was a beginning, there's a climax, and there's going to be an end. And I'm not sure which of those two pictures is more accurate, but I think it's useful to know that the Jews thought in terms of this linear picture of things. And that is so thoroughly in our own bloodstream that we can hardly conceive of a play, for instance, or a novel, or a book, or a story around a campfire that does not have a setting of the stage, a thickening of the plot, a climax, and a resolution, or a denouement. And that is the gift of Israel and the Greek tragedians, too. I mean, it goes way, way back. That kind of picture. And Christians, of course, see the beginning, thickening of the plot in Israel and the prophets and so on, the climax in Jesus, the birth, death, and resurrection of Jesus, and now the working out of that, the gift of the Spirit poured out on all flesh. And then the final consummation, or the final fulfillment. And the final fulfillment, again, is not just punk, it's all over, but the richness of the completion of God's plans. And I like to think that that's happened, and that we're moving in that direction. I spoke yesterday of this eschatological prolepsis, whereby we anticipate, even today, the gifts that we're not supposed to get until heaven. Only God was supposed to forgive sins. Well, Jesus says, I'm going to forgive sins, and I'm going to give my followers the authority to forgive sins. You're not supposed to forgive sins until heaven? Well, I'm not going to wait for heaven. I'm going to forgive sins now. Only men can be circumcised and become part of the people of Israel, and women and children, they're kind of like property, like a field or a piece of land. Well, no. The new mark of God's family is going to be baptism. Anybody can be baptized, right? Don't have to be circumcised. As soon as I heard a woman, a Roman Catholic lay theologian say this, when the church opted for baptism instead of circumcision, in that moment, the argument against women's ordination was already lost. You know what I mean? I mean, in the new Israel, women and children and men, together with men, are part of that. And all those were meant to be signs of the kingdom, signs of the coming of God's reign.
They resisted that for a long time.
Oh, did we ever? We learned slowly.
The Catholics still
don't. Oh, they still, yeah, they're going to come around.
They may have won the argument, but 2,000 years later, almost.
Sure. Like, don't you think they're going to come around someday? I'm certain they are. Not with this present pope, but with some pope in the future. I cannot conceive that they will maintain their position, ultimately. I mean, that's just intolerable.
The Lutherans in Australia are still...
They're still fighting with that, yeah. Yeah. But I just see that that's justice. And you know, Paul, St. Paul talks about, what is it, Galatians 2:23 or whatever. In Christ there is no slave or free, no Jew or Greek, no male or female. There is no slave or free. It took us 1,800 years to solve that one in North America, right? I mean, until 150 years ago, people were owning other human beings. So it took us that long to figure out the first of those two, you know, the meaning of those polarities. Jew and Gentile, we still are working on that one, and that one will be a long time coming, but I like to think that we're Jews. Christians are kind of Jew, special kind of Jew. And then, of course, male and female, we're working on that right now. But I like to think we are working on it, and it'll make a difference, and one of these days, all people will know what we know now. Even children, you know, I don't want to brag, far be it from me to brag, but in Canada, I'm an American, actually an American citizen still, but we've been living and working in Canada for 12 years now, and the Canadian Lutheran Church has a statement that's kind of shocking to some other Lutherans even, namely that communion is the meal for all of God's baptized, which means little kids, infancy. Now that's not the position of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America yet. I'm sure it will be one day, but it's not yet. And it's certainly not the view of a lot of other denominations that you could mention.
How do the younger children celebrate?
Well, in the Greek Orthodox Church, for instance, they've been doing this for a long time. And as soon as the baby is baptized, they give him a little bit of bread and wine, sometimes mixed together on a spoon. And then from then on, they don't usually commune the baby until the baby is in arms and old enough to reach. As soon as they're old enough to reach, and the pastor slaps the baby's hand and says, no, this is for grown-ups, boy, they get right away the feeling, I'm excluded. Do you see what I'm saying? So I would say, as soon as the kid is old enough to realize that this is God's party, and I want to be a part of that party, and I want to have what everybody else here has.
I don't know.
It's a picture of faith, isn't it? I mean, it teaches us grown-ups. Anyhow, we're getting off the track here, but I do think those kind of things are on the way, and they'll come. It'll take a long time, and longer in some places than in other places, but I'm convinced it'll come. And I like to think that the Canadian church here, Canadian Lutheran Church, is ahead of the game. I think they do this also in the Lutheran Church in Chile, and there may be a European Lutheran Church that does this as well. But it's still rather new and rather strange to a lot of Lutherans, and certainly a lot of other Protestants, but I affirm it. I mean, I think it's a fine thing.
Well, that's done here at Holden, too.
Say it again?
Here at Holden, children are...
Do they? Oh, wonderful. I think you'll find it more frequently than you might suspect, particularly when you think that the church does not really have a statement that allows it.
I talked to someone on the commission that came up with fifth graders. We asked her about ELC or LCH. She said, well, it really didn't have a good scriptural historical reason for picking fifth graders. They just kind of figured that was as good as anything else.
I think as soon as a kid is ready to feel a part of that family, we should include that kid. Okay, Pentecost. The day of Pentecost, of course, is the third of the great Christian feasts, Easter being the very first and the most important, Christmas being the second, and now Pentecost. It's the harvest festival for Israel, and there's some nice associations there. You ever sing the hymn 312 in the Green Book? Sing to the Lord of Harvest. That's wonderful. And it talks about the harvest of souls. I mean, the Great Commission is what it's talking about. And there will be many ways of celebrating this day and enriching it. Kathy told me of a couple that I had not heard of before. Do you want to tell about them? Because I didn't hear the conversation. You did.
Oh, I was talking with Ricky Jackard from Portland, and her husband is the pastor of the Joint Roman Catholic Lutheran Congregation. And she said that this past Pentecost, they asked everyone to bring small white buttons, like the ones that pop off the front of your shirt, so if you're throwing your shirt away, or you're starting to use it for rag, cut the buttons off and bring the buttons in. And they had a red banner, and they sewed the buttons on in the outline of a dog, so that when the banner sort of waved, you kept the light would catch the buttons.
And every member of the church had a button, huh?
But that was one banner that they made. And then a year ago, this Pentecost, we went back to Amherst, Massachusetts, where Paul was pastor for a couple of years, 12 years ago, for confirmation of children of God. Hemsworth, and he was participating in the service, and I went with the people we were staying with down to get the newspaper before the service began. And the paper place was across the street from the Episcopal Church, and I also heard a trumpet. And I just finally discovered that the trumpeter was standing in front of the Episcopal Church.
Right here? Speak nice and loud.
Was standing in front of the Episcopal Church and playing. I don't, didn't have any music, but it was just a lot of celebratory kind of trumpet music. And then I thought, these are crazy people. They're all coming in red. Red shirts, red skirts, red pants. There was some man with a bright red pants and a bright red plaid jacket. And I thought, wow. And then I thought, Pentecost. They were all asked to wear something red for the service.
Even the people in the pew had vestments on. Yeah, neat. Oh, you have the,
we
do you really?
We wore red and it was incredible.
Oh, really? So it's not new to you?
No.
I never heard of it before, but that was kind of...
It's a beautiful sight.
I'll bet it is.
It's just celebratory. There's no other word for it.
Now there's others that know about it.
Wonderful.
We released red blues.
Ah, yes, I heard of that too. Yeah, marvelous. I have also, I served a very ethnic congregation at one time, and I invited everybody... actually the week before Pentecost, to bring a postcard or a poster from their home, from their homeland. And I put it up inside, I actually put it up behind the altar. We had a kind of a movable space, and I might actually have put it up, if I didn't put it behind the altar, I put it in the narthex anyhow, a great big display of all these postcards and posters from the lands that were represented in the congregation. And then, on the day of Pentecost, again, by arranging it ahead of time, I had one of the verses of the gospel read, I think it was the peace verse, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, give I to you. That's the gospel for the day. And I had that verse read in 10 different languages. Swedish and Norwegian and German and French and Polish and Latvian and Estonian and all the people who were, it was an ethnic congregation of refugees. And they had fled during the Second World War. And so they stood up in church one after the other and read just that one verse after I finished reading the gospel in English. And oh boy, you saw tears in the eyes of some of these people, because it was the first time in a long, long time that they had heard, you know, these words in their own language. So it was neat.
We do that type of thing with anyone who can speak or read a foreign language. They do it simultaneously.
Oh, all of it, so it's like talking in tongues, yeah, wonderful. On Pentecost Day.
Yeah.
Neat. I've heard a Pentecost, what do you call them, choral reading, or what's the word for that? Choral reading, maybe, is where the choir, in other words, instead of singing an anthem, reads that story from Acts 2, you know, suddenly there was the rush of a mighty wind and so on. They read that like a choral reading. And, oh, boy, that stands the hair up on the back of your neck. It's beautifully done. If it's, you know, people are saying, power, wind, rush. You know, these voices are speaking over other voices. And the women just speak. And then the men just speak. Oh, boy, it's very powerful. Some other ideas for Pentecost Day itself? Let's move on to some other days then that come up during the course of, you know, the song says it's a long, long time from May to December, and it is. That's all green for us, you know, in our book, in our calendar, which is the same as now, or again, it's part of the ecumenical consensus, as I would describe it, a kind of a basic calendar for the church year, which includes purple or blue for Advent, white for Christmas and Epiphany, green then for the very brief post-Epiphany season, then purple for Lent, then white again for Easter, 7 weeks of white, red for Pentecost Day, white for the Holy Trinity, the Sunday after Pentecost, and then this great long season of green, which is, in the Methodist tradition, I think they call that Kingdom Tide, and or part of it, anyhow, is Kingdom Tide. Anyhow, all of that red, or pardon me, all of that green up until Advent again, when you go back to blue. Now, as it happens, there are some what I call red letter days that interrupt the sequence of green. I flashed this book last time. This is called the Minister's Edition. Does it say that down at the bottom here? No, I guess it says inside here. Minister's Edition. And there's also a minister's desk edition, which is smaller, and it fits on the minister's desk, but it's essentially a photo reduction. It's a photocopy of this book, only smaller, that the minister can refer to it on, in his own bookcase. But this is the book to be used at the altar. So I call it the altar book. And in the altar book, you have this wonderful calendar, same as the calendar in the pew edition, which you should have. You should have that passed out. Would one of you be willing to grab a couple of copies of the green? How many, my lord? 20, maybe. Could you pass them out? We ought to all take a look. I'm going to take a break here. I'm on page 10, 11, and 12. Well, first of all, we should look at page 9, I suppose. Thanks very much. Yes. I'm great. Thank you. Take a look at page 9 at the very beginning. This is our calendar, and as I say, most Christian churches now have the option of using this. Even the churches for whom this would have been, you know, kind of Catholic, even 10, 15 years ago, they're now using this kind of thing. So you have the Christmas cycle, Advent season and Christmas season, with the Epiphany. Then the Easter cycle, which includes Lenten season, Holy Week, Easter, Pentecost, then the time of the church, the season after Pentecost, the Holy Trinity, and then the second through the 27th Sundays after Pentecost, and the final Sunday, the last Sunday after Pentecost, Christ the King. So that's the rough outline, you see, of the Christian year. Now, if you turn the page, 10, 11, and 12, you'll see lesser festivals and commemorations. And again, many of these are celebrated and observed in other Christian churches besides Lutheran. If you'll notice, the festivals or the important days that are in all capital letters, they have a slight precedence over the ones that are just in ordinary print. So, for instance, January 1, the name of Jesus, you'll note that that's printed in capital letters, and therefore that's called a lesser festival. But the next day, Johann Conrad Wilhelm Leuha, pastor, he's one of the heroes of our faith. He happened to be a German Lutheran in Germany who began the deaconess movement. The Lutheran deaconesses, you know. So he's a guy we ought to remember. So we have a day for him. Usually it's the day of their death, for whatever it's worth to you. Martin Luther King being one of the exceptions, I think the calendar makers here bowed to popular American use, and they celebrate now his birthday. But traditionally, that is Martin Luther King's birthday, but traditionally, when you see the calendar here, it's the death day that is the birthday to eternal life. So it's the death day that's celebrated and noted in most of this calendar. And among these are all called commemorations. We are commemorating, we are remembering these heroes of the faith, male and female, and from every continent, and from every century, and from every race. The people who put this calendar together, in other words, tried to find people who were precious to the Lutheran and Christian tradition, who represented all of that breadth, you see. The word Catholic, again, small c. I interpreted Catholic, was it last week or the week before? It's a good word. We should not give up on that word Catholic, small c now. Capital C, that's Roman Catholic, and that means a denomination. but small c Catholic, that's from two Greek words, kata holon, and it means pertaining to the whole. So something is Catholic if and when it pertains to the whole of human life, the whole of the human race, the whole of the creation. And that means it judges me, and it judges you, and it judges all our traditions, including the Roman Catholic. Even the Roman Catholic, you see, are judged by the standard of this small c Catholic pertaining to the whole. In other words, is Roman Catholicism really whole enough? Is the Lutheran Church in Canada or in the USA whole enough, full enough, big enough? God is always bigger than we think. And that ought to judge us. And that's why I say, and I have said in these sessions, tradition is one way of reminding us of that. And tradition is one way of giving Grandpa and Grandma a vote in the decisions that you must make today. We want to honor Grandpa and Grandma's witness, and their Grandpa and Grandma, and their Grandpa. You see what I'm saying? In other words, we shouldn't think that we have to reinvent the wheel every generation. Now, we will have to print a new book every generation, probably. A book like this has 30 years life, probably. And I think we probably should start in on the next one soon. But we should honor, in this book, we should honor the predecessor book, and the book that preceded that, and the book that preceded that, and so on. I mean, I think that's only being mature. It's only adolescents who want to throw out the past. I'm not saying that Grandpa and Grandma have the only vote, but they should have a voice, and they should have a vote. Sing unto the Lord a new song does not mean we have to stop singing the old song. Let's sing a new song, and this Marty Haugen stuff I think is beautiful. I woke up from my nap this afternoon, and I'm singing that Joyous Light of Glory hymn from their Vespers. I mean, that is neat. So there's worthy stuff from every generation, and we ought to honor that. We ought to make the most of that. So, this is our calendar. Take a look at these wonderful names in here. Kai Munk, do you know his story? He was a Lutheran pastor in Denmark who was part of the resistance movement to Hitler, and they found him dead in a ditch one morning in 1944. George Fox, you know that name. Maybe you don't. What is he? Quaker, yeah, he's the founder of Quakers. So here are Lutherans giving honor to a Quaker. I mean, that's kind of neat. He has something to teach us. Burggrab, Martin Luther King, then the Confession of St. Peter. Again, that's a lesser festival, so we want to maybe honor those at a slightly different level, a slightly more important level than some of these other more contemporary people. But I'm glad we have all of this richness here. For whatever it's worth to you, this book has in its calendar every day of the year, with the idea that in your parish you can put in whatever you want, you know, on certain days. Do you know what we have in our calendar back home? I think it's the 14th of April. Frank Laubach. Any of you know Frank Laubach? Or do you know that name? Missionary. At Each One, Teach One. I think he was United Church of Christ missionary in the Philippines, and he taught the Moros, the Philippine natives, how to write and read. And his system now is all around the world, and it's a great big institution now, Laubach Literacy. But Laubach lived down the street from us when we lived in Syracuse, his family did. And we got to know the old man, who was an old man by that time. And I participated in his funeral, and our kids, this would be the third generation now, kind of grew up together. Anyhow, he's a wonderful old guy, gone now. But we have him in our remembrance. Now, you might also, if your church, for instance, has the name of St. Mark's, you know, you might look for a St. Mark's Day in that list and say, hey, maybe our congregation should do something special on there, have a potluck supper or something. I think that'd be neat. And there'd be other ways of finding a special day for your church. You know, if your church is the Lutheran Church of the Holy Trinity, you might make something then of that Sunday after Pentecost, which is the festival of the Holy Trinity. You get what I'm saying? If your church is called St. John's, you might celebrate the 26th of December. Is that it? Or the 27th of December? Take a look. 27th, St. John, Apostle and Evangelist. St. Stephen, the 26th, the Feast of Stephen. Good King Wenceslas looked out on the Feast of Stephen. What day was that, friends? Very good. The day after Christmas, exactly. 26th of December. You didn't know that, did you? Anyhow, some great stuff here. St. Francis Day, the 4th of October. Take a look at that. The 4th of October, the Anglicans, the Episcopalians, have a tradition from England of blessing the fields and blessing the pets, and they would invite all the little kids to bring their pets to church on the 4th of October, and the priest would have a little prayer to bless them. That's kind of a nice idea. You know, St. Francis was especially fond of the animal world and all of the creatures, all creatures of our God and King. You know that hymn? That's St. Francis I mean, that presumably is St. Francis' hymn. And we have tried that in our church. And lacking real live pets, we have sometimes told our little kids that they could bring their stuffed animals to church on that day. And we'll have a little prayer for all the animals, live and stuffed. I mean, it could get into superstition, right, and magic, and we wouldn't want that to happen. But I think if we can, again, listen to the sacred, we want to give honor to all of that wonderful world out there and show that God means it. Was there a comment? Yeah, yeah, and the kids respond.
We brought animals in. What was the report of one church in England where they all the children did bring their animals, and there were lots of animals, and they reported that all were very well behaved except for
a hamster.
A hamster, which got loose and nibbled at the altar.
Yeah. Somehow it doesn't seem too dangerous, does it?
No.
Would this be considered the lesser festival?
Definitely, yeah, definitely lesser.
A lesser of the lesser.
Very good.
No,
a commemoration, actually, in our way of putting it. Different churches have different ways of describing this. We would call it a commemoration. And I think of something worthwhile to consider, anyhow. October the 18th, look at that day. That's St. Luke. And Luke has two traditions associated with him. I don't think either of them are in the Bible, but they have a long history in the tradition. One is that Luke was an artist, and he painted a portrait of the Virgin Mary. The portrait doesn't exist, needless to say, but that's one of the traditions about Luke. Second tradition about Luke, can you remember? Doctor, yeah. He was a physician. Again, it's nowhere said in the Bible that he was, but there's this long tradition that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. And so there is the Order of St. Luke. Maybe some of you know it or are members. Any of you members? Order of St. Luke, very good. Hospital people, right? People in the healing professions, including therapy. And that would be a good day to have a healing service. Have you ever had a healing service in your parish? Raise your hand. Let's take a survey. Look at that. Do you believe it? Wonderful. That's not in this volume, but it's in another slim volume called Occasional Services. And it's a companion book to this. I looked for it in the library and I didn't see it, but it must be around here somewhere. The Book of Occasional Services has a service of the word for healing. And if you will turn to the service of the word, page 126 in this book. Service of the word, page 126, is a service specially developed when you want a rather full service, but you don't want Holy Communion, let's say. So you sing a hymn. Here you see where I am on page 126? And then there are two kind of general sets of responses, and then a set of response for Advent and a set of responses for Lent, especially seasonal ones. Then the Creed on page 128, an Old Testament hymn or canticle, or another hymn, the prayer of the day, first and second lessons, sermon, another hymn, offering, prayers, Lord's Prayer, New Testament canticle or hymn if you want it, and benediction. So, you know, it's kind of like a Protestant service. And the healing service, the service of the word for healing, at the time of these prayers here, it goes into those, it changes the prayers and has them specifically focus on healing and upon the person, even anointing with oil. And a little cross marked on the head. Again, it's not meant to be superstitious or magic or anything like that. It's just a tactile reminder. The gift of somebody else's hand on your head is wonderful. And they used to do it here at Holden Village, even before these books were printed. As often as every 2 weeks. Isn't it, Barrett? You can remember those days. I can, too. And Carol Hinderly. Any of you remember Carol Hinderly? Oh, he had total recall of Bible passages, and he would had his hands on your head, and it was just roll out of him. It was wonderful. You remember part of that?
Oh, yes.
I would love to see that again.
And Wes Preeb used to assist him, and he was as
yeah, good and as layman, Carol Wes Preeb. Yeah, wonderful. And he was as good as Carol Hinderly. Oh. We ought to do that. Anyhow, St. Luke. Reformation Day, October the 31st. I'm going to say something grumpy about that in a minute. I will hold that. All Saints Day, another important day in our calendar, remembering all the people who aren't in the calendar, who are nevertheless dear to you, your family, my family. Christ the King is the last Sunday in Pentecost, and on that day, the color is white, And it's the last, you know, it ought to be around the end of November somewhere. And we found, we kind of invented a little liturgy. When the offering is brought forward in our church, along with the bread and the wine and the money, which ought to be coming down the center aisle, we have somebody who carries a model of a city. And you can buy little models, of course, in the model stores, model trains. They have even in Europe a hobby called card modeling, where you cut out of cardboard little houses and fold them and glue them together and so on. And I've made such a model of a city and presented it at the altar, along with the bread and the wine and the money, as a reminder that all of God's creation is meant to be under God's rule and under God's lordship. And Christ is the king, so to speak, over the creation and over the world. In medieval stained glass and in mosaics, you can sometimes see the picture of a bishop presenting a city, a little model of a city, to the king, or vice versa, the king presenting to the bishop. And it's a nice picture. It's meant to be a picture of Christ as the Lord of our whole world, including our cities, and a reminder that maybe even our cities can be saved.
Why not use a globe?
Or a globe. That'd be a neat one, yeah. I hadn't thought of that. Wonderful. Next year. Very good. I mean, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I think we should be about that kind of business. Okay. Are you ready to turn to celebrations that never should be celebrated?
Mm-hmm.
Here, I'm really sticking my neck out. I presented this back at seminary a year ago, and I had two introductory remarks. First, a quote from Alfred North Whitehead. He is a philosopher who says that in some situations, it is more important that a proposition be interesting than that it be true. What he means by that is that if somebody throws out a proposition, you know, you can argue about it if it's interesting. But if it's not interesting but obviously true, there's nothing to talk about and you can all go home. So anyhow, in that spirit, I present these grumpy thoughts about celebrations that never should be celebrated, in the hope that it's at least an interesting proposition and it stirs the pot and, you know, it gives us something to talk about for the next 20 minutes. Then the second quote, this is from H. Richard Niebuhr. He might have been quoting someone else too, as a matter of fact. This is from his book, Christ and Culture. He says, "We are usually more accurate in our affirmations than in our denials." And I like that. In other words, when we affirm something, when we say yes to something, we're usually more accurate than when we say no to something, when we're critic or bitchy or grumpy or cynical.
So are you saying that things that you just went through are more accurate than what you're going to
say? Exactly. You have got the point. That is exactly what I'm going to say. When Paul Bosch is positive and enthusiastic about something, he's probably more accurate than when he's grumpy and bitchy and cynical. But for the next few minutes, I'm going to be grumpy and bitchy and cynical, just because it's kind of fun and it stirs the pot, okay? But don't take me too seriously. But take me seriously enough. I have six categories here of celebrations that never should be celebrated. First, I'll list all six of them, and then I'll come back to them, and then we'll talk. First, what I'm calling celebrations that amount to clerical solos. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then what I call the civic calendar. Remembrance Day, Victoria Day, Labor Day, AIDS Awareness Day, 10 Days for World Development, that kind of stuff. Then what I'm calling, this is the third category, the Hallmark calendar. Mother's Day, Father's Day, Secretary's Day. Then what I'm calling, this is number four, displaced feasts. Christmas in July. Christmas Sunday, Reformation Sunday, All Saints Sunday. Not Reformation Day, you see, which is the 31st of October, but the Sunday that's nearest it. I'm grumpy about that. Okay, then number five, what I'm calling the Protestant calendar. And Protestant here is a equal sectarian. I mean, it's a pejorative for me in this context. Student Sunday, Layman Sunday, Children Sunday. Reformation Day. I have that on my list too. We'll come back to that. And then finally, number six, parts of celebrations. No need to have a creed every week, no need to have a confession every week. I would, again, we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's go back to the top now. First of all, celebrations of clerical solos. When I was a kid, my dad was a pastor, and he did everything. He stood up front there, he led the prayers, he read the scriptures, he did the preaching, he did everything but play the organ and sing the anthem. I mean, it was very much a one-person operation. And I think that's a mistake. And the new book, the new material here, new, 15 years old now, that provides for a wide variety of ministries, each of which is very important and very significant, and that tell us something about ourselves. In other words, when my dad did everything up front there as pastor, you got the feeling, I got the feeling certainly, that the people wanted him to be Christian for them as well the rest of the week. Do you get what I'm saying? Exactly. You know, that doesn't hold up, for me anyhow, the priesthood of all believers. The priesthood of all believers means I serve you and you serve me. And we serve each other. And so there's a proper role for the presiding minister here, and there are six things that the presiding minister ought to do on Sunday morning. The greeting, the sermon, the words of institution with the bread and the cup, the benediction. Have I missed two? Somewhere along. Well, that's another lecture. Anyhow, there's some things properly that the presiding minister, the ordained minister, ought to do. But there's some other things in this book that lay people ought to be doing, including this part that marked A, assisting minister. Assisting minister ought to lead the bids of the Kyrie, peace, let us pray to the Lord. Assisting ministers or lectors ought to read the scriptures. Assisting ministers or deacons or whatever ought to lead the prayers, the intercessions. Anyhow, we ought to give those people their proper honor and their proper ministry. Same with the organist and the choir and the ushers and the acolytes. I mean, there are a lot of the altar guild. My goodness, if that is not an important job, we should give people. We should encourage the people to offer their gift. And so I would speak against the minister doing everything on Sunday, the ordained minister doing everything on Sunday morning. I think that's a big mistake. And this book, I think, moves us in the direction of honoring all the lay people in their ministries. So that's one category. Second category I'm calling the civic calendar, and I'm relatively sympathetic to these, as a matter of fact. I'm not sure I would never celebrate, let's say, Memorial Day or Labor Day or AIDS Awareness Week or 10 Days for World Development. Those maybe I would celebrate in the sense that I would certainly mention them in the prayers and the intercessions. I'm not sure I would design a whole service around them, but I would certainly want to, you know, that's on everybody's mind, right? This weekend is Labor Day weekend, so, you know, we ought to remember that. Or this week is Memorial Weekend or Remembrance Weekend or whatever you call it where you live. Even things like 10 Days for World Development, you know, or International Women's Day, the 6th of March, 8th of March. You know, we ought to remember those days, and I'm relatively sympathetic to them, and so I'm kind of exempting them, you might say. Let's move on to the third category, Hallmark calendar. This is Mother's Day, Father's Day, Secretary's Day, Grandfather's Day, Grandmother's Day. I mean, there's a whole list, and boy, they found out ways to separate you from your money. You know, buying a card or flowers or whatever. Lord have mercy, that's the American free enterprise system, let me tell you. Again, it's kind of harmless, and I certainly want to remember my mother and even my secretary. But, and maybe I'd remember them with prayers too on Sunday morning. So I'm already, you see, qualifying and backing and filling, and putting conditions on my grumpiness. Go ahead.
This last Halloween, one of our church members was in Hallmark store, and she was kind of bemoaning the fact of all the Halloween cards. Their display was larger than the Christmas cards. There was a Hallmark representative there, and what are you trying to do, make Halloween bigger than Christmas? And how the Hallmark person said, in so many words, we will make Halloween larger than Christmas.
Ooh. Wow.
That's our intention.
Well, that's marketing inventiveness, you know, in the free enterprise system. You can't, maybe you can fight against that, but it's certainly...
If you just don't buy them, then
yeah, yeah.
Can.
But it's certainly part of our world, isn't it? Go ahead.
In Australia, we were visiting a church there, and they got in trouble. They were celebrating All Saints Day with the kids, having a party. And they were accused by the community, by some of them in the community, of devil worship. So that got them in trouble with the community.
Yeah. I think that's a misunderstanding, don't you? I mean, that's not devil worship. There are a lot of misconceptions. What do you do about Mother's Day, you know, when that was that, the second Sunday in May? And Father's Day. They're worth mentioning in the prayer, surely. And they're worth having flowers, sure, I'll do that. You won't? Yeah.
I mean, they aren't mothers.
That's a good warning, though.
That's a good warning.
And the church that advertises itself as the family church, ooh, that's awfully hard on singles, isn't it?
But everyone's got a mother.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Everybody's got a mother. Anyhow, I'm just pointing out the problematical. You know, there's some problems here that we ought to be sensitive to. I'm not sure I have a solution. But there's a problem there.
No, but that's the solution. We have mothers and
daughters. Yeah.
Just
it's very easy to offend some sensibilities, and we ought to be as sensitive as we can. Okay, that's my third category. My fourth category is what I'm calling displaced festivals. Not transferred. There is a tradition in the church of transferring a feast or transferring a festival. For instance, the 25th of March, let me check, I'm sure I know what I'm talking about here. I teach this stuff. I ought to know what I'm talking about. The 25th of March, yes, the Annunciation of Our Lord. That's presumably when the angel comes to Mary and says, you're going to bear Jesus. And as I pointed out yesterday, it is 9 months before the 25th of December. So it's 9 months of Jesus' conception and then his birth. Now, that's a lesser festival. In other words, that's something we really probably should pay some attention to. And I would think the churches, here's another thought, this is kind of a footnote, but I would think the churches in a metropolitan area could get together and say, hey, let's honor some of these festivals. Ascension Day, for instance. Does anybody do anything with Ascension Day? But that's a Thursday. It's always a Thursday, just before, you know, a couple of weeks before Pentecost. And wouldn't it be nice if all the churches got together at one of the churches and had a combined service? So for this, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you had a combined service at one of the congregations in your area to celebrate the Annunciation on the 25th of March? Now, the trouble is 25th of March can sometimes fall in Easter, you know, or Good Friday or something like that. Now, if 25th of March happens to be Good Friday, then the Ascension gets transferred to the next Monday. You see what I'm saying? And you look in the calendar that the church publishes, you know, the yearly calendar, and you'll see 25th of March, Good Friday, and then when you get to the 26th, 27th, 28th of March on Monday, it says, Annunciation of Our Lord, parenthesis, transferred, end of parenthesis. That means that it really should have been on Good Friday, but because Good Friday is more important, we celebrate Good Friday and we push Mary back a couple of days. Okay? So that's called transferred, and that's legit. I mean, that's perfectly legitimate. But you should know that in a lot of traditions, a lot of non-Lutheran traditions, and even in some Lutheran cases in some parts of the world, they don't celebrate Christmas the 25th of December. They celebrate Christmas Sunday, the Sunday nearest Christmas. Or they don't celebrate, as a lot of churches don't, Reformation Day. They celebrate Reformation Sunday. Or they don't celebrate All Saints Day. They celebrate All Saints Sunday. And Christmas in July is another example of it. I would say let's do it on the day that that is supposed to be. I explained Christmas in July yesterday to the gang who was here. Christmas in July began here at Holden Village in the days when there was no winter program. There was no winter community at all. It was just a summer operation. And these people who knew and loved each other through the summer said, oh dear, let's celebrate Christmas now because we won't see each other 6 months from now. And that made some sense then, I suppose. But I have misgivings about Christmas in July coming up this Sunday, although I'm devoting my body to it, and I'm leading Vespers tonight, and I'm going to have an Advent wreath, and it's supposed to be the first Sunday in Advent, and maybe it's a teaching opportunity.
We'll pray for you.
Will you pray for me? My conscience is compromised. Oh, dear. But I'm not going to be grumpy tonight. I mean, tonight I'm going to be all smiles and cheerful. But I do have some misgivings about it. And the neat thing about it is, you see, the 25th of July already is a red-letter day in the calendar. You will look. It is the day of St. James the Elder. Now, whoever heard of St. James the Elder? Well, his brother John, I suppose, and his father Zebedee. But, you know, maybe we could do something with that. I like the idea that Holden Village has a great big holiday every 2 weeks. I mean, that's the way it used to be in the old days, and I think it still is. You know, you have the 4th of July, and you have a big parade, and everybody puts on a crazy costume. Have you ever been here on the 4th of July? Oh, it's lots of fun. Three-legged races and stuff like that. Say it a little louder. Who's? That's the one that that Harlan Frost celebrates, St. Urhu's Day. Have you ever heard of that? Finnish? Well, it's a joke. Anyhow, you had to be there. Anyhow, could some creative person come up with something for St. James? You know, who knows? Maybe we could read up about him and discover something really exciting and decide that, oh boy, he's the saint of the environment or something. I don't know, but I give that to you as a homework. See if you can replace Christmas in July with something that's equally fun, but takes time more seriously. That's my problem with these displaced festivals. They do not take time seriously.
Bach festival on the
28th. Bach? Johann Sebastian Bach. Wonderful. Bach, Schütz, and Handel.
Yeah.
Are they really?
Started last weekend.
Oh, really? Wonderful. Wonderful. And it's this time of year.
Saturday.
Wonderful.
2 years ago, they had a lot of the players come up here. And
ooh, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Just marvelous music all week.
Why? They got a little town called Hanover in the northern Ontario, and they call themselves the Leipzig of the North. And they got Pinka Zuckerman, for crying out loud, coming to play for a Bach festival that runs for a week. And they got choruses and they got organ recitals. You wouldn't believe it. Little tiny town. Anyhow, I think that kind of stuff bears some thought anyhow. All right, moving along. My fifth calendar, my fifth grumpy category is what I call the Protestant calendar. Student Sunday, Layman Sunday, Children Sunday. Every Sunday, dear friends, is Layman's Sunday, lay people's Sunday. Every Sunday ought to be Children's Sunday. Every Sunday ought to be Student Sunday. I mean, you know, well, again, I'm going to back and fill and compromise and qualify, sure. Let's give some kind of recognition to students, let's say, when they start off in September or when they come home at Christmas and they have that holiday time, you know, Christmas, New Year's. Sure, let's honor that. But every Sunday, we ought to be honoring lay people, surely, and every Sunday we ought to honor children and we ought to honor women and we ought to honor blacks and whites and yellows and, you know, I mean, that's the Catholic katholon, according to, pertaining to the whole. And that ought to be clear among us every Sunday, pertaining to the whole. Okay, my last grumpy category is parts of celebrations. I don't think it's necessary to have a confession every week. The book allows that. You see, it says at the very beginning of our communion, what's the wording? The brief order for confession and forgiveness, page 77, may be used before this service. Now, that means you don't have to use it every Sunday, because the service itself, particularly the Holy Communion, if it's communion, is the chief sacrament of reconciliation and forgiveness. So the whole service offers that. If, as I would want it, for instance, on the white days, by that I mean Christmas and Easter and the seasons that pertain to Christmas and Easter, you did not have confession, pardon me, then you would want to have maybe a prayer of confession as part of the intercessions. And that's also noted here in rubric number 22. Prayers of confession may be included if the brief order for confession and forgiveness has not been used earlier. So you don't have to, every Sunday does not have to look like every other Sunday. You could begin, for instance, in the Sundays of the Easter season, 7 weeks, you could begin the service right away with the entrance hymn and the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and go right into the service without the confession. I don't think you need a confession on those celebrative days. It adds a kind of breast-beating mood to the beginning of the service that's not necessary. Now, I think I'd use it other times, perhaps, and I think maybe I'd even have people kneel in Advent and in Lent, but at other times, you might, the red-letter days, the white-letter days, I think I would omit confession. The creed, you don't have to have the creed every Sunday, dear friends. That may come as a shock to you, but it says rubric number 20. You know the rubrics? They're very important, these little red directions. Rubric, rubor, Latin, meaning red. And these directions in red, I heard a liturgiologist say this, and I quoted this last week. If our rubrics, if our directions were clear enough, and if we understood them well enough, we wouldn't need texts. These are the stage directions, so to speak, and the black ink, that's the script. And if the actors, including you in the pew and me in the chancel, if we both knew our part, we wouldn't have to have the text in front of us. Anyhow, rubric number 20 here, the creed may be said. So certainly on weekdays you don't need the creed, and I would even say certain Sundays maybe you don't need the creed. There are some liturgiologists who say that the creed adds this element of kind of hard-nosed didactic pedagogy and, doctrinal stuff, and you've got to sign your name to the bottom of this or you're not Orthodox and so on. It gives some of that mood in what is otherwise a doxology. The whole service is meant to be doxology, praise. And all of a sudden you've got dogma in the middle of doxa, so to speak. And some people think it doesn't really belong there. Since it's here, I'd use it. I'd use the Nicene Creed on the red letter days and the white letter days and the purple and the blue days, and use the Apostles' Creed on the green days. But I wouldn't use it at all during the weekday, and maybe many of the green days I wouldn't use it either on Sundays. Okay, moving along. The Athanasian Creed. Oh, my Lord, I'd never use that. The wording is difficult, I think, for modern sensibilities. So I would not use it. Something else. I'll tell you another thing I wouldn't do. I wouldn't use the bare bones verba. I would not use, in other words, you know what I'm talking about when I say the bare bones verba? Turn to page, I happen to open to setting 2 here. Page 89. Page 89, we're in the middle of the communion service. 30, the minister continues using one of the sections below. 31 is this option of a Eucharistic prayer, you might say, with the words of institution, the verba, so to speak, at the top of the next page. In the night in which he was betrayed, our Lord Jesus took bread and gave thanks and so on. That's called the verba, the words of institution. And option number 32 on page 89 allows Lutherans and whoever uses this book to, where's that coming from? It allows the presiding minister to use just those words. But and that was Luther's recommendation, I have to admit that. Luther was so fed up with all the abuses that had crept into the prayer of thanksgiving that he threw the whole prayer out and he kept just those words of institution. So number 32 is a very German, very Lutheran way of doing things. But I also think it's sectarian, quite frankly. The rest of the Catholic Church, small c, the rest of the ecumenical church, always puts those words in the context of a bigger prayer, which is what the Red Book did. Red Book began that. And it was scandalous. when the Red Book came out, I can hear my dad, a pastor, saying, why are we telling God what God ought to know already? You know, that Jesus, on the night in which he was betrayed, took bread and so on. You know, that's kind of proclamation, and here it is in the middle of a prayer. But what my dad did not understand, and what other people at that time did not understand, and what we do understand now, is that Jesus was a Jew. And he was doing a very Jewish thing. And that is, whenever you pray, you give thanks to God in terms that are sometimes kind of elaborated, you know, and long and extended, so that the people who are listening in can be reminded of it. So you have sacrament and sacrifice all mixed together. You know what I'm saying? You have a Godward direction in your prayer, but you also have a proclamation direction in your prayer. That's called, that kind of prayer is called a berakah, B-E-R-A-K-A-H. And it's especially Hebrew way of praying, where you remind God what God already knows, but it's for the sake of the people who are listening into your prayer. So what I'm saying is, if I were a pastor, I would never use those bare bones words of institution, that 32 option. I would always use either 30 or 33. You see 33 there on page 90? Where are we? Lost my place. What page? Yeah, 90. Option 33, which is Scandinavian. This is the way the Swedes have done it. The Swedes have a little prayer of thanksgiving, and then the verba, then the words of institution. That's, if you want to save time, in other words, that's the route to go. We've come to the end of our time. Anyone want to say anything else? I've been rather outrageous this afternoon. Using the Yeah, I would make it a point always. Yeah, right. I would stick with the lectionary that the church gives us. And that's a pretty good lectionary. You know, during the Nazi time in Germany, the Reformed and the Lutheran met together, even in some cases Roman Catholic as well, pastors, to study the scriptures. And the churches, some of the Reformed churches, for instance, did not have a lectionary of pericopes like we do. And they began to appreciate how wonderful it is to have these texts already assigned, that you're not riding your hobby horse all the time. You know what I mean? I like to think, gee, these are the scriptures that the church gives me. I'm on page 13, friends. These are the scriptures that the church puts in my hands and says, okay, now you can use these. Sure, you don't have to use them. We have evangelical freedom.